This is Barbara Lewis, and you're listening to my good friend, Mike Miller, on the Harmony Street Show.
Hi, this is Abe Santiago, and you're listening to my good friend, Mike Miller, on the Harmony Street Show.
Hi, this is Kenny Bank from the Five Sharks, and now, most recently, from the Dukes of Doo-Wop. And you're listening to my good friend, Mike Miller, on the Harmony Street Show.
La 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 la. La 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 la
side, went with his good night, and knew that we would never part. She said that she loved me, and told us I loved her, and it felt so grand just to hold her hand. Don't you know I'm a happy teenager?
There he goes, that Mr. Lucky Guy. Smile on his face and gleam in his eyes, he's a happy teenager.
When we kissed goodnight and knew that we would never part. She said that she loved me and told her I loved her, and it felt so grand when she held my hand. Don't you know I'm a happy teenager?
There he goes, that Mr. Lucky Guy. Smile on his face and gleam in his eye, he's a happy teenager. La 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 la.
Hi, this is Mike Miller, and you're here with me on the Harmony Street Show, and it's my sincere pleasure to have as my guest a friend, a person who has dedicated most of his life to our genre of doo-wop and R&B, a person who was a member of a group who was a forerunner in the area of a cappella in the tri-state area. That group was the Five Sharks, and they remain, as I say, one of the forerunners in that genre. Also a member of the Dukes of Doo-Wop, successfully singing out in California, doing major shows. I'd like to introduce my good friend, Mr. Ken Bank. How are you, Ken?
Hey, Mikey, after that, I don't know if there's anything else I could say. Thank you for the warm introduction.
Well, you know, well-deserved, because you, as myself, found this music, I realize, at a very young age. And even though you've dabbled in other things, you know, the music just remains part of your embodiment, so to speak. You know, it's always there. I found that even in the bad times in my life, if I turn towards the music, it always saves my soul. I'm sure you found that too.
Well, yeah, you know, it's interesting because when I first, you know, very first encounters with this kind of music when I was really a young kid growing up in Washington Heights, and we were living on the sixth floor, and I would hear these voices come up at night from the building lobby down below, and I'm thinking to myself, what the hell is that? But it sounds really good.
Right.
I really liked it. And
right.
I listened to that stuff for, you know, a couple of months, and I actually started memorizing the songs. And I was the younger kid on the block. Everybody was 2-3 years older. And, you know, when you're 14 and they're 17, that's like a generation apart. But coming home from school one day, I heard these guys singing in the hallway again. And they weren't getting the song right. So I stopped to listen. And a guy turned around to me. I think it was Specs or Whitey. I don't know which one. But he looked at me and he goes, "What do you need?" And I said, "Well, your second tenor's off. He doesn't know the part." And he looked at me like, "What?" So I said, "Here, let me come in. I'll sing with you a little bit, and I'll show you how to do the part."
Right.
And from that moment, I was hooked. Just hooked.
Well, I wanna even take it back further. Now, you gave it away. You were born and raised where?
Actually, born in Brooklyn. On Bay 18th and Ocean Avenue, but my parents moved to Washington Heights, Upper West Side, just off the Hudson River when I was about a year and a half old.
Right.
And that's really where I grew up.
Uh-huh. Were your parents musical?
Actually, yes, because my father was a singing waiter in Miami Beach.
Uh-huh.
My mother was a dancer, and then my father became a dance instructor. So I grew up with two parents that were teaching. They call it salsa today, but back then it was ballroom dancing. I grew up with all the, you know, Tito Puente and the Broadway Orchestra. Wow. My father was dancing at Roseland. I mean, there was music in the house, that's for sure.
Wow, that's fabulous. Because I know myself. Now, I was a Bronx kid. My family moved to Armonk. And, of course, we used to ride on Sunday. My father would drive up the Sawmill or the Taconic or wherever. And we'd go out Sunday. And we'd either look at new homes or we'd look at the countryside or whatever, you know. And I always had a fight because, you know, I was sitting in the back of the car. And though my father was listening to Patti Page and Eddie Fisher, when I was really young, my mother threw a little transistor into my crib or little youth bed, and I used to play with it. I guess she did that because it was a pain in the ass. She wanted to keep me quiet. But my ears found the end of the dial, WWRL and WNJR, and I was listening to the Harp Tones and the Nutmegs and the Spaniels. And for some reason, probably just like you, when I was 11 or maybe even 9 and a half, I knew all the lyrics and the words to all of those tunes, and I have no idea how they got in there.
Well, but, I mean, it went a little further because, you know, when you're 11 and 12 and the guys are 14, 15, we would go to parties on the weekends, and we called them sets, and everybody would
right.
come in with their 45s.
Right.
And, you know, a little red light bulb burning in the corner. But meanwhile, I'm dancing to, you know, the Diablos, the Wind.
Right.
Or you know, the Paragons Meet the Jesters.
Gotcha.
Or you, just all these wonderful slow tunes that was caught in the moment, but it became part of your DNA. Because
right.
you were up close against a girl that you were trying to impress or whatever. And the music was part of that experience. And I think that also helped to... solidify what was taking over my passion, which
right.
has, you know, gone on for 50 plus years, right?
Hey, John, how are you?
I'm okay, thanks. It's Johnny Mathis, and you're listening to my good friend Mike Miller on the Harmony Street Show.
So here you are, you know, you've got a taste for the music and all of that. When did you realize there was one day, I know, where all of a sudden you looked in the mirror and you said, you know what, I can sing. Wow. When did that happen? Was there a revelation one day when you said, hey, you know what, I can really sing?
Yeah, I think it was, you know, at the time I was singing with my best friend growing up, Henry Salas. We're still in touch. He was a member of the Five Sharks.
Right.
As Sal, and another buddy of mine named Frank Asensio,
right,
who actually was on one of the tunes that the Sharks recorded back then.
Right.
But we used to travel to different sections in New York to go to parties.
Right.
And invariably, there'd be a group singing, right?
Uh-huh.
So the three of us would come in and take over the background. And whoever the lead was singing would sing in it, and they'd turn around and go, God, you guys are pretty good.
Right, right.
So, you know, I think when this one cute Spanish girl turned around and looked at me, and I saw that look in her eye, and I went, okay, I guess this could be used as bait if I needed to.
Wow.
So I think it was then when we were traveling the other neighborhoods and singing, you know, with other people, that Sal and I and Frank figured, you know, we got something going if we could find a lead singer.
Well, you know, that brings to mind a similar story. You know, I'm friendly with J.T. Carter, and I asked him one time, I said, you know, give me the real story behind Juanita. I said, because a lot of people say it was Maestro's Chihuahua, and it was this, and it was that. He said, no, I'm going to tell you the real story. The real story was where we lived and we used to practice and rehearse. He said, in the neighborhood was this older than us, probably about 23 or 24 year old, fine Puerto Rican girl named Juanita. And
oh, yeah.
Of course, she would never look at us because we were younger. We were like 16, 17, 18 at that time, whatever. He said, and she would walk down the street and we would stop singing and go crazy and bump each other and elbow each other, whatever. Me being the bass, whenever she would be walking down the street, I would go, we would all stop and we would look at her. Really and truly, I did that one day, and all of a sudden, being creative guys, a tune grew out of that, he said, and that was Juanita. He said the tune was about Juanita in a neighborhood. I have no idea what her last name is. I have no idea where she is. But she really and truly was the inspiration for that tune. And I think it's similar to your story.
When Juanita walked down the street, we used to like stay outside of her building all day because we knew she was going to come out and go to work. And when she walked down the street, I would say, and that sound was the shape of her hips moving as she walked. And she was a beautiful young lady. Of course, we never got very close to her, but we wanted to.
Well, yeah, I mean, it became a vehicle because, you know, in those days, Mike, you remember, you know, there were a lot of gangs that were running on the streets,
right.
a lot of rumbles that were going on, and gang fights and stuff like that. But
yep.
The guys on my street, especially us, we were more social. And we weren't, if we didn't have to, we didn't want to get into exchanging fists with anybody.
Right.
So we started a social club, which was centered around Sal and Frank and I. We formed a social club, even got sweaters, you know, with the SC on the side. We called ourselves the Half Angels, Half Devil, Half Angel. That was what the singing group was called. So we used the singing group to gain entree to different parties all over the city from the Bronx all the way out to Queens and Flushing. You know, we'd take the train and that was our thing. Sometimes we got chased out of the neighborhoods. Sometimes we got in the fights, but it was the singing and social club that basically cemented it for me. Plus the fact, and I get reminded by this by some of my friends that I've reconnected with from Brooklyn Tech, because I went to high school in Brooklyn from Manhattan.
Wow.
And We used to sing in the bathroom. Little did I know, Mikey, and this is kind of interesting because, you know, Brooklyn Tech is in Fort Greene.
Right.
Not exactly one of the better neighborhoods.
Well, it's where Mike Tyson used to roam and beat up people.
Right, but you know who else was singing in Fort Greene?
Little Anthony and the Imperials.
That's right. Uh-huh. And I'm thinking today, how come I didn't know that, and how come I didn't make that connection back then? It was like 2 degrees of separation. Like you said to me the other night, 1 degree of separation.
Right.
He's there, I'm singing, we're singing in the soda shop in the afternoons on the corner. How come I didn't run into him?
The universe does that to you because it wasn't time yet, you know?
Boom, 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 boom.
Possibilities.
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 Somebody watch me.
Do you know who
I am?
Open your eyes and see. He does a
door.
He's waiting for
you.
Could this be me? It's a possibility.
Possibilities.
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 Oh, possibilities.
It's not incredible, incredible for a guy to feel the way I do. It's not impossible for you to feel the same way too. I'll be reliable, I'll never treat you bad. I'll give you loving you never had.
No.
You know I want you right by my side. I'll wait eternally. For maybe someday you'll be my bride. And maybe we'll be free.
So you're saying to yourself, wow, I can sing and I need to plug in. And you know as well as I do that hitting harmony with guys that know their stuff and having it ring is like a spiritual experience. So, what was actually the first group or the first bunch of guys that you put out there that really, where you were singing, more than two or three tunes, where you had?
Well, yeah, that's easy. When I graduated from Brooklyn Tech, poor Pop said we got no money to send you to college. So,
okay.
I'm going to night school and working during the day. So I went to Bronx Community College, right? And started a fraternity because I didn't want to pledge with a bunch of other guys. We got a frat house, up on Fordham Road above the theater. Sal and I and Frank used to sing at the frat house. One guy one weekend came in, one of our frat brothers, and said, I know these guys that are singing up here, and they're looking for new voices because they're trying to make it switch in the group.
Uh-huh.
And that was the original version of the Five Sharks.
Wow.
That had a body of work. They had been recording. They actually did the first a cappella show at the Hackensack Fox in New Jersey.
Right
around the blackout. So they came up to the fraternity house, and it was Eddie Schwartz.
Right.
It was Steve Horn. And it was Mark Denep, our lead singer.
Uh-huh.
So we went out into the lobby again because it's all marble, and we started singing. And when we sang those songs with Mark's voice, which is the lead that we had been looking for 3 years before,
uh-huh.
and with Eddie had has a great tenor. He just, it was magical.
Wow.
And everybody in the frat house turned around and went, oh, shit. That's great stuff.
Wow.
And that's kind of where, for me, it really connected.
Well, to be able to, jump off the diving board and all of a sudden dive into the five sharks. I mean, that's a good entry, into the genre. I know for myself, I had a trio in high school and whatever, and there in high school, they were forming a group called the Islanders, and I joined them. So I had two groups going, and we used to, in the alcoves of the windows and go to Jones Beach and sing on the towel. And we used to sing 3-4 nights a week, just out there, after school, at night and everything. And so we had quite a repertoire and whatever. One thing led to another. We were on Relic and this and that. But one of the big joys, and this is true, we'd all four of us get into either my GTO or one of the other guys' cars, and we'd just go to different towns like Long Beach or Mineola or, Hempstead. And we'd go on a Saturday night where a group was hanging out, and we'd just start singing. And you didn't need anything else but your voice and maybe the pitch pipe, and all of a sudden you drew crowds. We did it at Nathan's in Long Beach, and the guy used to chase us all the time and say, "Maguire sisters, get out of here, beat it." And I would say, "Look," he'd say, "but nobody's buying hot dogs." I says, "Yeah, but look at all the people that are staying. What, stop singing, they're all going to buy sodas and hot dogs." He didn't realize what a great thing he had. He chased us away.
Well, yeah, we I think back then, unbeknownst to me, there were a lot of groups that were doing exactly what you did. We certainly were.
Right.
I mean, Orchard Beach was right in our backyard. We used to go there all the time.
Right.
Friday and Saturday nights, we got on the train and went down to Greenwich Village. And, you have crowds of people that are walking the streets along 8th Street and around McDougal Street. And that's where we started singing on street corners, to the point where the mounted police would have to come along and break up the crowds because the cars couldn't move.
Wow.
And I would love to say that it was because we attracted, thousands of people, but the reality is the streets are so narrow down there that, you get a couple of hundred people and all of a sudden, things aren't moving. But I remember having to go into the Cafe Roi. We had no money. We would sing for hamburgers and,
wow,
and hot chocolate. And it was kind of our intro. If we got hungry, we would go into a restaurant, ask to sing, and all they had to do was feed us.
Well, it's a great way to meet people, too. I mean, girls, producers, interesting people that come and go. It's different than just singing in your neighborhood to teenagers. When you're singing to a cross-section of people, you never know what might happen. Look at all the groups that got discovered just because somebody passed by, heard them singing, and said, "Here's my card."
Well, that happened to us. As the Sharks, we had a producer, Bobby Miller, and right. I don't think he's related to you, but Bobby also owned a record store up on Fordham Road, but he was the one
right.
that was recording us and then pressing out the plastic, and selling our 45s and making sure that, the Five Sharks were out in front of the fan base in that tri-state area.
Right.
But one of the favorite places for us to rehearse would be the subway station at 182nd and Crescent.
Okay.
And it had, there was a little vestibule there that was kind of off to the side, so you were kind of surrounded by a ceiling and three walls of tile. So
yeah.
it gave us great acoustics,
sure.
but it was in one of those rehearsals that some guy was walking past, he stopped, he listened, he walked up the staircase, then he came back down the staircase and said, "You know what, guys? You need to call me because I think that we might be able to help you."
Don't know why there's no sun up in the sky. Some you
Mark Gowan are together. It's raining all the time. It's raining all the time. Well, since you went away, blues came in and met me. Don't come back to stay. Rocking chair will get me. Lord above will let me
walk in the sun once more.
God, everything I have is gone. Stormy weather, Lord, bring us back together.
Records and their A&R guy, Dave Rubenstein. We wound up getting an introduction to BT Puppy with the Tokens, because
right.
They were looking for a group also to produce. But at the time, you know, we're singing doo-wop, and groups like the Happenings and the Buckinghams
right.
are out there, and there's a musical switch going on. And we haven't made the switch, so, you know, everybody's
right.
looking. So we eventually wound up getting sent over to Mike Verona, who had a company called Diamond Records, and he was looking to do a deal with Shelby Singleton, who is a producer and promoter out of Nashville. And that's when they decided to take the Five Sharks and turn them into something a little bit different.
Gotcha.
So they renamed us the Dawn's Early Light.
I seem to remember that, yeah.
And this was not doo-wop.
Right.
And they gave us the songs to remember, and they brought in the musicians and into the recording studio. And the next thing you know, we've got two records, an A and a B-side, Monday Kind of Friday, which is the A-side, and Look in Her Eyes, which is the B-side.
Gotcha.
You win it. true. She may lie and say there's no one else, but each time she lies, look in her eyes, you find the truth is hiding there. She may cry, she wants you for her lover.
Look in her
eyes, she really, really cares. But each time she cries, look in her eyes, you find the truth is hiding there. Truth is hiding there.
She will tell you you're cruel, you're nobody's fool, and whisper little lies in your ear. Don't listen to her lies or her advice. She's just saying things you want to hear, baby.
She seems sincere, but does she mean it?
She's
a dream, but is she kidding you? Now if you are wise, look in her eyes, you find the truth is hiding there. You find the truth is hiding there. Everybody knows. You find the truth is hiding there.
And definitely not sounding like we had sounded before.
How did you feel about that?
You know, I was conflicted, Mike. We were caught. This is 19. You got to remember, this is when I joined the Sharks. Was late 64, early 65.
Man.
Beatles had just landed on the beachhead. Producers and record labels were looking for groups that could write their own music.
Right.
And also play. So there was this battle going on to try and keep our music that we were singing, which was established and started in the late 50s, you know, through the early 60s. So we got caught in that. How did I feel? I kind of liked the way the song sounded. I thought, okay, this is pretty cool. And then it broke in New York. WOR had a top 100, and we broke into the top 100, I think, at 96. We were two places ahead of the Beatles, Sergeant Pepper's Lonely Hearts Club Band.
Right, right.
So I kind of felt, you know, when you look at that, you go, I didn't know from anything about the music business. All I knew about was singing.
Right.
But seeing your name up in front, you know, two places ahead of the Beatles, I thought, okay, well, that's not looking too bad.
Sure.
So the song picked up, started to pick up quite a bit of steam, but then the inevitable happened to yours truly. In that January of 68, I got my draft notice.
Yeah.
And went off to Vietnam. The group never had a chance to promote the music or to promote those two songs, so it kind of languished on the vine. And Singleton then went out and scored his first big hit called Harper Valley PTA.
Right, right, I remember that, yeah.
Right, and that's what he was looking to do. He wanted to get a foothold into the industry. He looked at us, thought this would be the way to go about it, but Uncle Sam had other ideas for what Ken was going to do.
I had a similar thing, you know, with the Islanders. After Relic, we were signed by GMC Records, which was an offshoot of MGM Records. Gino Moretti, he's the one that actually signed Connie Francis for MGM, and he used to tell me that, and I would go, yeah. And then when I spoke to Connie, I said, Gina Moretti, she says, oh, my God, I loved him. I adored him. Yes, it's true. And I said, wow. And here I was, you're like a 17-year-old kid razzing this guy. But anyway, we had a tune called Where the Lights Are Bright and another tune called Baby Pack On, written by Ray Cerrone of the Bell Notes. And we were picked with a bullet in Cashbox the same week as Kind of a Drag. Kind of a Drag became a number one tune, and our record went, meh. So, you know, however, I found it as a hit, a soul hit in the UK, believe it or not, going for about $350. So,
well, you know, that's interesting you said that because, let's go back in time. So, going back to where we initially started with this and your question and the fact that people would notice you, whether you were singing on street corners or in subways, there was always that possibility of somebody stopping and giving you a chance.
Right.
And for us, I had met this, here we go back again with this Puerto Rican girl, at a place that I was working, and you know, she took a liking to me. She said, "Why don't you come down to this nightclub in Greenwich Village?"
No.
It was called the Downtown. Uh-huh. And the Chambers Brothers were the house band on the 3-month contract, right? So I think they played Thursday nights, they played Friday nights and Saturday nights. They played 3 nights out of the week. So, I mean, I went, you know, for me, I was interested in her, watching her dance on the dance floor was all great.
Right.
But the Chambers Brothers were, that was different level.
Right.
I mean, this was these guys from the South. They had a gospel sound. They were doing some incredible music. I remember.
Yeah,
Old
they
Man
could
River
play. They could play.
Oh, their Old Man River was amazing, and they did a version of People Get Ready.
Right.
So, during one of the breaks, and the girl turns around to Willie and says, "You know, this guy sings,
right?
And he's got a great group."
Yeah.
So he looks at me and he goes, "Really?" And he goes, "I said, yeah, we're doing a lot of R&B stuff, a cappella." He says, "Why don't you bring the boys down?"
Huh.
So we did. We go back, I guess a week later, we come in on a Saturday night after the show, and they come out on the street and we start singing. And Willie says to me, "Wow, why don't you guys come back to the hotel with us?" So we go back to the Henry Hudson Hotel. The Hollywood Flames are on one floor.
Uh-huh.
They're on another floor. We wind up singing till 6 o'clock in the morning. Some of the Flames dart in and out, and we're just kind of jamming and just having some fun like we do. But at the end of the day, Willie took an interest in us and actually taught us how to sing that version of People Get Ready.
Wow.
Which we really enjoyed doing. And then also taught us how to do Old Man River.
Did you ever do those in the studio? Either one of those?
People Get Ready is actually on a 45.
Uh-huh.
But it was, People Get Ready wasn't done in the studio. With Bobby's method of recording us was on a Wall and Sack acetate recorder.
Right, right.
And then they would take that music and give it to whoever was making the 45.
Every song,
have pity on me.
Don't you wish that we had iPhones or these little recorders in 1963, 4 and 5, where you could record rehearsals that you did? Because, I mean, God knows, I had my reel-to-reel and a box of tapes from the Islanders reel-to-reel where we had tunes like Exodus and Four Upon Harmony, Moonlight in Vermont and Four Upon Harmony, that was stolen out of my car. I forgot to take it out of my car one night, whatever, and the trunk was popped. And they stole, I said, you know, I would gladly let them keep the recorder, just give me the tapes back, but they took that too. And that stuff would be priceless now. If you could only have recorded even some of the rehearsals, you know, it would be great stuff, you know?
Well, yeah, I mean, yes, if we had the technology, it would be wonderful. But it was what it was. But
right.
To continue the story with Willie and the Chambers Brothers, anyway, we were able to learn how to sing People Get Ready. I like the version that the Sharks did. We're actually going to roll that song into the Dukes of Doo-Wop songbook. It's going to be, I think, the third or fourth song coming up that we're going to learn,
right,
and put it into our repertoire. But the other song that used to just tear the house down, I mean, I remember doing a show at the RKO Fordham, and we ended the show with Old Man River. Now, you know, you look at the dynamics, you got, you know, five white guys, right? You know,
right.
A couple of Jewish kids and a couple of Puerto Rican kids up on stage.
Right.
And they're singing Old Man River,
right.
But because Mark's voice was so, his range was so incredible, mm-hmm. and Eddie was always up in the stratosphere, and Stevie, you know, his bass riffs were starting to get a lot better.
Right.
Brought the house down. Always was our last song. It'd be a song I'd like to sing with this group as well. I tried to get them to learn how to sing it before, but one of our prior members didn't want to sing it, thought it wasn't right for a white group to sing about, you know, black issues, but hey. Anyway.
Hey, it's about it's about the music. Come on.
Yeah, well, yeah, right? So fast forward to 4 years ago, and I hear that Willie Chambers is in town.
Right.
And he's playing at a club here called the Edison. And I look at that and I go, holy shit, we're playing the week before on the same stage at the Edison. So I go back the next week with my wife because I hadn't seen him in, 40 years or whatever it was.
Right.
And we're front row table with my wife, and the end of the show, he puts on an amazing show. Everybody is getting ready to leave, so I'm getting ready to leave also. My wife grabs me. She goes, why don't you say hello? I say, he's not going to remember me. Well, it's so many years ago. She goes, no, just go up and talk to him. So there was a brief moment. He caught my eye. I went over and I whispered in his ear something that I knew he would remember.
Well.
And his eyes lit up and he goes, holy shit.
Cool.
Where the hell have you been? Right,
right, right. Right.
So the next week after that, we wound up actually sharing a stage at a place called Wits End here in California, in Venice. And I actually sang two songs to him. And he was sitting in the front row with a grin on his ear. Love that man. He's a great guy.
Cool.
Really,
that's
great guy.
That's a really good story. Well, now, my friends and I, you know, we had a daughter that lived in Newport Beach for a long time with her husband, and when she got pregnant with her first, she moved back to Florida to be near mom, you know, and now is pregnant with the second. But we were out there a lot, you know, and have a lot of friends out there, believe it or not, and some of them call that coast not the West Coast, they call it the Best Coast. So when are you coming out to the Best Coast? So it makes me laugh, because I know for a fact, and I can speak for you, that your heart is really, one part of your heart is a New York guy, and one part of your heart is on the West Coast. You know, it's like, you gotta love them both. you know?
Well, yeah, bi-coastal for sure. And, you know, so here I am. I'm drafted. I'm in the service, right? End of my singing career as I knew it, because after coming back from the service, I pretty much kind of dropped out a little bit.
A lot of guys did when they came back from NAM.
Yeah, you know, I moved to Greenwich Village. Right. I kept working, and then, you know, in 1971, 72, I left New York and moved to California, and still hadn't sung at all. And I meet this wonderful woman in, you know, 2000.
Right.
I come home one day, got to be 10 years ago, and, you know, we're sitting down having dinner. She says to me, "When was the happiest time in your life?"
Ah, that question.
Yeah, and I had to think about it, and I said, "Well, I actually have two." She goes, "Okay, tell me one of them."
The day I met you, and...
That's exactly right. I learned that lesson.
Right.
But I told her about the time when I was singing, and I said, one of my biggest downers for me is that I had all this vinyl that I left with my mother when they were living in Deerfield Beach.
Right.
And somehow or another, all the vinyl got lost from one storage place to the other.
Yeah, you know? I know that story.
So... And I kept telling my kids that Dad used to sing, and, like, you know, I was on, you know, about a dozen or so 45s, a lot of compilation albums. We did all these shows, a cappella shows in the East Coast, da-da-da-da. Yeah, and that's lip service, right? But Dad don't have anything to show for it. So she goes, "Well, why don't you go back and reconnect with those guys?"
Right.
I had never used Google before, so I went on Google.
Right.
And I typed in the Five Sharks. And lo and behold, this thing pops up. It says the best of the Five Sharks.
Wow.
you love her. I know with a broken heart you go your way, and she'll go her way.
Holy shit, there's all my music. $14.99.
Right, right.
So I get my credit card out, and I'm going to go order it, and I think to myself, wait, they didn't make CDs when I was singing this stuff.
Right,
who the hell
right.
did this?
Right, right.
It was Steve Horn. You know,
right.
He did it
too. Lo and behold.
And I looked at him and said, Steve Horn, now with the Legends of Doo-Wop in Florida.
Right.
And I said, shit, I'm not spending the $14.99. Let me get a hold of Steve.
Right.
So I actually found him through the Legends website, dropped an email to him.
Right, and he said, you know what, Ken? This is great. I'm only going to charge you $9.50. Yeah, no, he was actually more gracious than that. He said, hell no, don't buy it. I'll send you a couple for free. And it was really, really nice. But the bigger issue, the bigger thing was we talked for about an hour, and this is all within an hour of sending him an email. And then 2 hours later, I get an email from Eddie Schwartz, who's our first tenor. So right.
with that one day, I connected with Steve. I connected with Eddie.
Wow.
Right? And I go, where's Sal? So I did another Google search. I felt I was on a roll. 425,000 hits for Henry Salas.
Wow.
And on page 10, I found something that reminded me of him
right.
from the Pan American Health Organization. And I found him in Peru, of all places.
Wow.
Believe that? So, well, we reunited. Actually, at one of the LAR shows in Hop Hog, the Legends of Doo-Wop were singing that weekend. So we all met together at the Plaza Hotel.
Right.
the night before. We went into the bathroom. We started singing.
Wow.
I'm standing in the freaking bathtub at the Plaza Hotel. I thought it was really strange.
I'll never let you go.
Darling, if you run, you gotta run real slow, man. I really love you so. I want you to know. I really love you so, darling, so much.
Oh.
Wow. Tell me about Steve Horn, because I knew Steve Horn for many years, and I also knew him down here, and he was very revered, sometimes not by the guys who sang with him, but by most people who understood what he was on stage, how he could take over a stage, how he could handle the bass parts, and he was a great showman, which, by the way, not to make you blush, everybody that I mention your name to says to me, wow, Kenny Bank, what a fantastic, talented showman, and what a force Kenny was on stage in those days. And by many people. So, put that in your pocket. There were an awful lot of people who remember you as a great entertainer on the East Coast.
Well, I don't know if I'm going to be able to fit my head out the door when we finish, but thank you for that very much. Steve was an interesting guy. And I don't think it's a secret that, when he was younger and even through the rest of his life, that he had issues with drug dependency,
right?
Or he would be there one moment and be with you one moment, and then you'd have a show and he wouldn't show up,
right?
Or you'd have a rehearsal and he wouldn't be there, but he was always hustling,
right?
And I think he was the one who got us our shows at the RKO Fordham. He was the one who got us the shows at the Launching Pad. He was the one who got us the shows at, there was a place on Jerome Avenue called the Big Toe.
Right,
which we sang a lot at. And it was always Steve that was coming up with, I got us another gig. So, he, in my mind, was kind of the guy that was pushing us out there. And I liked him. He had a great sense of humor.
Right.
But he was also kind of closed regarding his personal life and personal issues.
Yep.
And I think that manifested later on in life.
Yeah.
A lot of people said he was very difficult to get to know, that, he was tough in business, because I guess he He went into the record business later on, collecting and selling,
right,
and distributing.
Right. Well,
and he could be perceived as being difficult, and
right.
I could see where people might not have the same feelings about him. But when you're a group member,
right.
It's a little different, right? Because you're in the trenches, you're spilling your guts out in rehearsal and on stage by singing and making all those chords work, and you're all part of that one magical sound.
Hey, in the middle of a song, all of that other stuff drifts away. That's the beauty of the whole thing, that you have guys with different mindsets that all, you know, get into a tune and make it one. And that's the spiritual part of it. I mean, to me, it's spiritual almost sometimes.
Well, yeah, it is, Mikey, and it's, and I concur 100%. So, you know, my memory of Steve in those early days, the time that he was with us, it was great, and then there were a lot of times that he just wasn't around, and either because he was stoned somewhere or
right.
he just decided to go off and do something different. But, you know, what a shame for me, because when we connected, he said to me, well, what are you going to do? And I was at that Hop Hog show, and I met Terry Johnson from the Flamingos.
Right.
And I was talking to Terry, and he goes, you know, you were singing with Steve. Why did you stop? So I told him I told him what had happened. And he goes, don't ever stop singing, and if you get a chance.
Right.
Go back to it again.
Hi, this is Terry Johnson of the Flamingos, and you're listening to Mike Miller and the Harmony Street Show.
I came back to California, and the seed was planted. I got to do this again because this is what I love to do. So, you know, fast forward about four and a half years ago, I posted on some meetup page that I was looking to hook up with somebody to form a doo-wop group.
One of the things I wanted to ask you was this. The Sharks, did they do the doo-wop shop at any point? With Don K. Reed? Were you guys on the doo-wop shop at all?
No, not that I recall, no.
All right. How about TV, Clay Cole, or any of that stuff?
No. We never got that far. I mean, we were a cult group, singing cover songs, doo-wop, and then, as I explained, at a point in time, we got changed to this commercial group.
A pop group. Well, but you did do an awful lot of the quote-unquote a cappella shows with other very important groups from the genre, because I seem to remember that.
Oh, yeah, we did both shows at the Hackensack Fox, and I don't know if they ever did any more shows after those first two, but those were huge shows, where, you know, groups were singing outside behind the theater and out in front of the theater. It was an amazing time.
Well, believe it or not, you know, Relic Records grew out of that whole situation, which was Eddie Grice and Wayne Sterili, where, you know, they were in Hackensack. That's where their main base was, and that kind of grew out of that whole situation.
Right, and that was a wonderful show, I got to tell you. I mean, it was a huge auditorium. Luckily for us, we were spot on that night, because as you know, when you sing a cappella, you're singing without a net to catch you.
You bet.
And we closed again with Old Man River, and everybody just went ballistic. Steve sang bass for the Notations that day, because
wow.
the bass didn't make it.
Great
so.
Group. Now, Notations were on Relic as well, so it's all part of that nucleus.
Right, right. And I think Abe Santiago, who you know very well, I'm
yes.
sure, he's written a book, and he's sort of kind of put a label on the sound that was coming out of the tri-state area at
right.
the time, and he calls it the Hudson Sound.
Right.
Because it was all based around, you know, you had the Bronx, Manhattan, Brooklyn and Queens,
right.
and New Jersey, and Philly, but it's all based around the Hudson River.
Right.
But yeah, we were, you know, we did those two shows at the Hackensack Pucks, the RKO Fordham. And we did another one that I don't remember. My memory's lacking, but there was another big show that we did. I think it was out in Brooklyn, but Eddie will probably be able to remind me if I pick up the phone and ask him.
Eddie and I talk once every couple of months. When I talk to him, usually an hour goes by, an hour and a half goes by, and he says, listen, I got to run, you know, because once you get into talking about guys that you know and things and places and groups and whatever, you get lost in it, so to speak. We worked with a group with Harmony Street. They used to open up for us a lot. It was a group called Things to Come, and they were an a cappella group, and I would marvel at the fact that they did not use a pitch pipe. They just got up and sang, and they would do sometimes a 45-minute a cappella show with no pitch pipe, and I would scratch my head. I told you the story when we were in the dressing room with Eugene when we did the Fort Pierce show. You know, we backed up Eugene, you know, as we do with Norman sometimes. And he's in my room, and I had all the tunes on my phone, and I was going to play him into a little speaker, you know, to go over them. And so instead, you know, while I was getting it ready, I took out the pitch pipe. We were going to do Happy Man. And he looks at the pitch pipe and he says, man, Miller, he says, put that shit away, man. He says, I never used a pitch pipe in my whole life, and I ain't about to start now. And he said, here's the note. And he gave me the note. And then I turned the tune on the phone, and it was like right there. So.
Well, you know, it's interesting you say that. I have mixed emotions on the pitch pipe,
right.
Because I think that, you know, a group that is fairly tight should be able to do it by remembering where
how it feels. How it feels.
Yeah, you know? And so, you know, we use the pitch pipe. Maybe at some point in time, I'll suggest that we lose it.
Right.
But it doesn't seem to be an issue because we're kind of discreet with it, so
yeah.
It's not really visible.
No, I hear you. You know, I mean, look, I'm a guitar player. I started playing when I was like 9. So having that point of reference, I can't tell you how many times, I mean, I arranged the Mystic stuff for many, many years, you know, from about the year 2000 on, produced 3 CDs for them, arranged all the stuff when I was with George Galfo. And many times we're in the room and somebody would go and sing their note, and I would say, wait a minute, it's not in the chord. Yeah, but that's the note. It's the note I always sang at this time in this song. But it's not, it's this chord, it's not in the chord. Here's your note, you know, which might be a half tone, you know.
Right, right. It might be a half step either way.
Right, and you know, I'm saying that is not the time to add the seventh. You know, it's just before the bridge that you do it, because I'm playing the chord and your note is not in the chord. So please sing this note. And they would look at me like, ah, you're taking the fun out of it. But we want to be musically correct, you know. I mean, if it was Tim Hauser, he would have beat the crap out of him, you know.
Exactly. He would have.
You know.
That was a group.
My greatest thrill was doing a 3-hour interview with Tim. And believe it or not, he was a Harmony Street fan because we had crossed paths many times. And he said to me, man, I loved Harmony Street. Of course, we had 3 girls. So he said to me, man, you guys were as good as we were, but we were better produced. And I said, get the hell out of here. He goes, no, it's true. And then I said, when you get close to a mic, you know, and all of a sudden you guys are singing really close together, and one of the girls, if you went out to dinner before and you could see the spinach between their teeth, he says, and it's in the interview, he says, I'll go you one better. He says, I'm the shortest one in the group, and I usually stand either on the right side or the left side on the end. If you saw me take 3 quick steps to either the right or the left, it's because one of the girls let go with one, he said, and I was out of there. And that happened quite a bit, he says, because those girls were ripe. And I said to myself, you want me to leave that in the interview? And he says, of course, that's part of the history of the Manhattan Transfer. He goes, and that's how cool he was. I mean, he's such a cool guy, you know?
Hi, everyone. This is Tim Hauser from the Manhattan Transfer. And you are listening to my good friend, Mike Miller, on the Harmony Street Show. Keep listening, man.
Right, right. Well, I mean, I saw them in concert a few times. I actually knew their manager at the time.
Right.
And his girlfriend later, who became his wife,
right,
was best friends with my wife at the time.
Wow. And he lived not far from you, you know. And by the way, as does Mel Carter. And I don't know if you know John Madera. Do you know John?
No.
John wrote Rock and Roll's Here to Stay, At the Hop, You Don't Own Me by Leslie Gore, 1-2-3 for Len Barry. He was a Philly guy. But he lives in Cambria. And whenever I go out to California, I try to make the drive up there to see him, you know, over the cliffs. But here's a guy who is really a legend, but a lot of people don't know who he is.
And Cambria is a beautiful section of the coastline.
Yeah.
As a matter of fact, my wife and I were just talking about perhaps going up there for a weekend and just chilling out on the beach.
What I should do is I should give you his number. He's the sweetest guy in the world. If you're going, you can stop in. The guy is like part of the history. He lives right near Hearst Castle. He goes jogging with a 45 because he says there are mountain lions. There were all kinds of game, like, on the trails where he runs, and he jogs with a 45 around his waist. Interesting. It's true.
Okay.
Yeah, you know, crazy. Crazy stuff. But anyway, getting back to it, so you have the Sharks, and all of a sudden now you come back from the war. Now, you were in the Army?
Yes.
And you saw front line?
Yeah, that's a long story. I shouldn't have been on the front lines because I had been educated as a structural engineer, but just the way things happened, I wound up being in the infantry.
Wow.
Working in an area of Vietnam called I Corps, the northern section just below the militarized zone.
And you didn't show them the note from your mother that said that I don't want my son in the front lines. I'll tell you.
No, but I thank my mother for getting me through some pretty hairy situations because I always felt that she was praying, and somehow or another, she must have been influential because I wound up coming back here without, you know.
I hear you. I lucked out because when the lottery came, I went for my pre-induction physical, and just at that time, the lottery came out, and I got a 327, and one of the guys in the Islanders, Tom Jackalone, drew a number 7. He went, saw front-line action, and I, even though I was in college and then I started teaching, I drew a 327 in the lottery, and all of a sudden, all of that tension and fear of having to go right in, you know, drifted away. So I lucked out in that sense, you know.
Right. Well, I mean, everything happens for a reason.
Yeah.
I didn't think that they were going to take someone that had my level of experience and training, especially in engineering.
Right.
You know, coming from Brooklyn Tech and then studying structural engineering at Bronx Community College and working for architects, you know, during the day.
Right.
I thought, you know, there's no way they're going to put me on the front lines. But, you know, they had other aspirations. They wanted me to fly aircraft for them. I had to re-enlist for 2 more years. They wanted me to focus on flying helicopters. And I thought to myself, why the fuck do I want to fly a helicopter and be hovering anywhere in the jungle?
What were some of your favorite groups early on, you know, that your ear found? What were some of those groups? What did your ear gravitate to?
Well, you know, I was always a Heartbeats fan,
right.
You know, would have loved to have met Wally back then rather than, you know, so many years later.
You bet.
Their music was always something that made me warm and fuzzy.
Right.
We were also, most of the guys in the Sharks, we loved the Earls. And we used to hang out and try and hang out at the Riviera Lounge up in Yonkers, which is where the Earls used to perform.
Yeah, I was there. I was there a lot too.
Right. So, I mean, we were trying to emulate them. I mean, we listened to their music. We thought these guys were just, you know, for us, that was one side of the music that we really liked.
Hi, this is Larry Chance of the Earls, and you're listening to, oh yeah, one of my dearest friends on earth, Mike Miller on the Harmony Street Show. One of my dearest friends, Mike Miller. Yeah.
But when Sal and I joined the Sharks, we also had this thing, you know, where we liked the songs coming out of Motown.
Right.
You know, we liked the Temptations and the Four Tops, so the Sharks wound up doing songs like Reach Out, I'll Be There.
Right, right.
And My Girl. And although My Girl was never recorded, Reach Out was recorded, but I can't find it. I've been trying to find it. I can't find it, but those groups were groups that I really liked. And then, you know, you have the Diablos, The Wind. Are you kidding me?
Right.
I mean, I just met them. I met Jay, was actually in the room next to me.
Yeah, up at Hop Hog, right?
At Hop Hog, yeah. And we had a chance to talk quite a bit. Really, really nice gentlemen. But they were singing off to the side, and I poked my head in. Man, just wicked, wicked good harmony.
Oh, yeah.
Those guys.
With the Mystics, I had an up-tempo version of The Wind that I had been saving since 1961 when I put that together. And I had the Mystics record it, and it's an up-tempo version. I played it for them on a show that I did with them and whatever, and they freaked out.
Yeah.
voices and their blend, it's different, right? You know, you always, different groups have different blends and different ways that they harmonize. It may not work for a guy who's writing the music, but when you listen to what they're singing, it's like, that's magical.
And by the way, people, there was doo-wop on the West Coast in those days.
Oh,
you know, I mean,
big time.
Groups like the Calvanes, and, you know, but they had a little bit of a different sound.
Right. And then you have, we made really good friends with Billy Foster from the original Medallions.
Right, right.
And Billy actually was with us. We did a couple of parades with him in one of his vintage caddies, and
cool.
He actually did that show out in Vegas with Norman Fox and my other guys. That
right,
back
right.
Up Norman is the Rob Roy.
Yeah, I heard that show went very, very well. As a matter of fact, you know, Norman always says, oh, man, the guys from the Dukes, man, we tear it up, we break it up, it's great, it's great. And Norman, of course, one of the sweetest guys in the world.
Obviously, backing up Norm Fox gives us a lot of intro.
Oh, of course.
We had a great time with Tony Middleton
right.
when he was out here backing him up. What a great man. I loved that.
Is there anything that you want to say as to the organization that you hinted about that you were part of for a while? Is there anything you have to say about that or would like to say about that?
Well, you know, I think I was very, very happy with being involved in the Doo-Wop Music Hall of Fame. I was invited in maybe 4 years ago, 4.5 years ago by Lonnie Cook to try and help make the organization a little bit more legitimate.
Right.
Very happy with the progress that we made during the time that I was involved. And as anything, a group or an organization will morph and change.
Right.
And for me, with the Dukes taking on or getting more work, working for LAR and JRW here and the other things that we're doing that we book ourselves, I just don't have enough bandwidth to be able to keep working with an organization like the Doo-Wop Music Hall of Fame. I think the basic mission statement is wonderful. It's to keep the music alive.
Right.
It's to put it out there and keep it in front of the general public. The work that we were doing in inner city schools and teaching the kids how to harmonize with, you know, with Harry Yeltsin and Drake Fry doing that. That was wonderful stuff. And I wish the organization the best of luck in continuing that mission, and not to take any curves, but just keep the mission in sight. I know that I had to step down the end of last October because I just didn't have the time anymore.
Right.
At one time, we had Wally Roker, Norman Fox, Charlie DeComo, and myself on
right.
the board. So we're not there. So the only thing that I get concerned about is for that organization not losing sight of the mission and keeping in touch with real doo-wop.
Right. No, I do understand that.
Do, ba, do, ba, do, ba, do, 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 ba, do, ba, do, ba, do, 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 ba, do, ba, do, ba, do,
sincerely.
Ba, do.
Oh, yes, sincerely, cause I love you so dearly, please say you'll be mine, sincerely.
Oh, won't you tell
anything for you.
Bado,
Bado, please say that you'll be mine.
Oh,
Lord. I love you so dearly.
Bado, Bado,
please say you'll be mine.
Bado, Bado,
oh say you'll be mine.
Bado, Bado,
oh say you'll be mine.
That's where I want to go right now. So you find yourself out in California and, you know, and you meet this lady and you start talking about singing. What happens next? You started to tell me about putting an ad in the paper.
Well, continue. It was about that same time that, Lonnie Cook asked me to help him with the Doo-Wop Music Hall of Fame.
And by the way, Lonnie was a great Harmony Street fan. I used to talk to him years ago, and we would have conversations on the phone years ago, and he was a Harmony Street fan. He's a really good guy.
There was a message board that we used, and the message board was used to talk to or to reach out to other members. And I posted there from the East Coast, originally sang with the Five Sharks. Back in the day, out here in California, want to start a singing group. I got an email from Jan DeTana. We call him Deke. And Jan's been singing with a group called Deke and the Blazers.
Great group. Great group. I remember them.
Right. Doing a lot of the shows for Canterbury Productions in the Midwest, right?
Right.
And
that's Henry Farag, right?
Yes. Yeah. So we decided, we sounded like we had something in common. So he said, well, I want to meet you. So he said, let's meet this Sunday. I said, I can't. I'm singing with a choir, in for the Agape International Choir. He said, I know Agape. I'm going to come down there and I'll listen to the choir and then we'll talk afterwards. And sure enough, he came down. I really, really liked him. We got together. We cobbled a group of two other guys, one guy based out of New York called Mike, his name is Mike Moshman, and I forget the group that he sings with in New York, but he was traveling back and forth from New York to California. And, you know, we cycled through a bunch of people, but Jan and I were always at the core and trying to find the right blend. And then Charlie had sent an email, said, I'm moving out to California and I'm going to want to sing with somebody. And so I sent him back, and this is Charlie DeComo. I said, Charlie, when you're out here, let me know and we'll try and help you find a group.
Well, right.
When he came out here, you know, end of story, I didn't have to look very far. We had our second tenor.
There are diamonds, pearls, emeralds, and rings. None of these jewels show me a thing. I want only I want your love. Your eyes, your lips set me on fire. Your love, your kiss, my one desire. I want only I want your love. Whoop, 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 wee you. To hold me. Whoop, 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 wee you. To kiss me. Whoop, 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 wee you. To thrill me. Whoop, 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 wee you. I don't want a chest full of gold, just want someone to have and to hold. I want only, 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 I want your
searching for a bass. We came up with a top tenor of Bill Frischman, who was singing with a group out here called the Daddy-O's. So we started our group with Jan Dutton and myself, Charlie DeComo, Bill Frischman, and at the time a bass was Mike Ball. And Mike was a jazz guy. He was he played horns, had this very eclectic musical library. Our songbook grew to 16, and we got asked to audition for this show that was based here in California, very similar to the Sing-Off, right?
Right.
And it was going to be produced by NBC, and they had seen our stuff on YouTube and our Facebook page and whatever. So we went in, we interviewed, they called us back for a second interview. Then they were calling us back for the third and final interview the day before Mike passes away.
Oh, boy.
And then we found a guy by the name of Rich Kennedy, who's about 20 years younger than us, but he's got a love of this music, grew up in Philly,
right.
was a doo-wop DJ back in Philly, and now you have that the present group, and we're pretty tight, and Rich is an extremely talented bass.
And the group is growing, getting more and more work. You got your CD out, which was beautifully produced, some great tunes on it. I'm sure you're going back in and have plans to do another one. I can just feel it.
I'm just very happy that there are people out there that are looking to embrace the music. There are younger people coming in that are singing it. You look at a lot of the stars today, they're going back and they're picking up these pieces like Boys to Men and Bruno Mars and, you know, Huey Lewis and the News, big a cappella group out of San Francisco when you go to their shows. It's wonderful to see that. And it's also very heartwarming to see that groups like, you know, Billy Foster and the Medallions and Al Sanchez from the Storytellers, they're still singing after 50 years out here. I'm glad to be a part of it, and I'm glad that my kids are able to see what Dad does. They love the CD. They blew their friends away with it. And it's just kind of heartwarming to be able to do that. You know, I'm not going to pay my mortgage from the money we're making from this stuff, but luckily for me, we're very, very comfortable, so I don't have to worry about that. And I just want to keep doing what I'm doing. I plan on singing for another 10 years if I can.
That's great. And, you know, really and truly, my analogy of this stuff is it's all a big, beautiful beach. You know, there are sandcastles and huge, giant waves and beautiful scenery and seashells and whatever. But Kenny Bank is solidly implanted in the genre, and you're one of those people that have made your mark in the genre. You are on that beach, you know, you're a beautiful seashell that is on that beach and part of the history and the genre of the music, and it's a wonderful thing.
Well, and Mike, needs to be said that we appreciate guys like you who are doing what you're doing in order to be able to keep the artists alive and visible amongst the fan base, and also doing your part to keep the music alive and to contribute back. That is so important to keeping the legacy alive of everybody that's gone on before us, and to keep the impetus alive going forward to see where it might eventually go to.
Well, I appreciate that, Kenny. You know, and I do it mostly to stay creative, but also to pay my homage and my respect to a musical genre that has been so ingrained in me. It's part of me. I love singing it. I love hearing it. I rub it all over my body. And, you know, it's just for the love of that genre, you know.
There you go, man.
Yep. Well, it's been great spending time with you. Thanks so much. I know how busy you are. And, you know, even though we're on opposite coasts, I look forward to hooking up with you and seeing with you either when I'm out there or you're here. And let's just say to be continued.
Absolutely, man.
All right.
Absolutely.
Thanks so much.
Once on a warm and magic night, we danced while stars shone bright up in the midnight blue, and I gave my whole heart to you. Funny you don't recall my name. It's still the same as on that night not long ago. You said that you loved me so. Oh, remember. In my embrace meant so much on that night we met. Told me that you never forget. Remember.
Remember.
Remember. Yeah.
Remember.
Remember. Remember me, baby. Well, I was the guy who was so much in love with you that I called you day after day. But now we're back again, and I don't know what to do. There's so much that I feel, and there's nothing I can say. But remember,
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 remember.
Let me go.
I shall. Maybe someday she'll come back to me, and our love will always be. She was my
bomb 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 dang 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 ding dong ding blue moon blue moon blue moon dip dip dip
blue 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 moon dip 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 blue 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 moon dip dip dip
bomb 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 dang 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 ding dong ding
blue 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 moon
you saw me standing alone without a dream in my heart without a love of my you knew just what I was there for. You heard me saying a prayer for someone I really could care for. And then it suddenly appeared before me. The only one my eyes could ever hold. I heard somebody whisper, please adore me. And when I look, the moon had turned to
dawn. Blue, 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 blue moon.
Now I'm no longer alone. Without a dream in my heart. Without a love of my own.
Bum, 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 dang, 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 dang. Bomb, 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 dang, 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 dang,
boom, ba bow bow boom, ba bow bow boom.
Ooh yeah,
bow boom.
They say it's all right,
ba bow bow boom.
Say it's all right,
ba bow bow boom.
Say it's all right to have a good time, 'cause it's all right. Whoa, it's all right. And then we're gonna move it slow,
ba bow bow boom,
and turn the lights down low.
Bow, bow, boom.
When you move it slow, it feels like more, 'cause it's all right. Whoa, it's all right now. Listen to the beat,
bow, bow, boom,
and kind of tap your feet,
bow, bow, boom.
You've got soul, and everybody knows that it's all right. Whoa, it's all right. When you wake up early in the morning, feeling sad like so many of us do, have a little soul, make life your goal, and surely something's gotta happen to you, and you gotta say it's all right.
Bow, bow, boom.
Say it's all right.
Bow, bow, boom.
Say it's all right to have a good time, 'cause it's all right. Whoa, it's all right. Everybody clap your hands,
bow, bow, boom,
and give yourself a chance.
Bow, bow, boom.
You got soul, and everybody knows that it's all right. Whoa, it's all right.
Bow, bow, bow.
Someday I'll find me a woman who will love me and treat me real nice. When my road's gotta go, my love she will know, from morning, noon, and in the night. And she's gotta say that it's all right.
Bow, bow, boom.
Say it's all right.
Bow, bow, boom.
Say it's all right to have a good time, 'cause it's all right. Whoa, it's all right. Everybody clap your hands,
bow, bow, boom,
and give yourself a chance.
Bow, bow, boom.
You've got soul, and everybody knows that it's all right. Whoa, it's all right. You've got soul, and everybody knows that it's all right. Whoa, it's all right.
As we stroll along together, holding hands, walking all alone, so in love are we two that we don't know what to do. So in love,
so in love,
so much in love,
so in love.
As we stroll by the sea, under stars twinkling high above, so in love are we two, no one else but me and you. So in love,
so in love,
so much in love,
so in love,
so in love,
so in love,
so much in love,
so in love.
We stroll along together, I tell you, I need you all so much. I love you, my darling. Can you tell it in my touch? When we walk down the aisle together, we will vow to be together till we die. So much love have we two, I can't wait to say I do. So in love,
so